You are listening to the sassiest podcast in the world. Born in the Nordics, democratizing B2B SaaS knowledge everywhere.
Hi, I'm Daniel.
And I'm Thomas, and we are experienced SaaS professionals that are curious about how other successful SaaS companies go to market, scale, build winning teams, and great products.
Join us on our journey as we speak to SaaS leaders trying to get hold of their secret sauce.
And today's guest is Marcus Stålberg, the CEO and co-founder at Enrich.
Don't do spray and pray. Like, that's my number one advice. It doesn't make sense. Like, you just, spray and pray means that you just do whatever and then, like, you know, hope that you get something. Hope is not a strategy. You need to be really kind of strategic.
I don't know what state of mind you're currently in. Maybe you are lying down in your favorite sofa. Maybe you have your pulse up, running in the woods. Or maybe you're just as excited as we are, because we are closing in on SaaSiest 2024 in Malmö, April 16th and 17th. We think it's the highlight of the year. Maybe you think too. So, hi, Daniel.
Hi.
Here we are.
Here we are. I was thinking, like, you know, I don't know if we did a cam grab here. I think, like, where is he going with this one? Pulse, laying in the sofa. But I like the build up, and my pulse is definitely high now. This is playoff season for us right now. Like, you know, it's around the corner. We're really exciting. All things are coming together. And what makes me most excited is that other people are excited. It's not just us here. Like, you know, people DMing us, we see it in social channels. People are really looking forward to it. And when we ask them, like, what are you looking forward to? Like, one person said it really well. Like, I'm coming for the speakers and the content, but I'm really staying for the networking.
Yeah. And it's the Super Bowl moment, it's the FIFA World Cup, it's the Eurovision. And for us, it's the ultimate B2B SaaS experience, and it's closing in. But today, we're first going to go into today's interview. And as always, we want to democratize knowledge and see how we, here as European SaaS companies, can challenge the big giants in the US. And here's a company that are on that journey. So here we go. Today, we are super excited to have Marcus Stålberg, the CEO and co-founder at Enrich, here as a guest in the SaaSiest podcast. So warm welcome, Marcus.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Very excited to have you here. And we're curious, like, where in the world are you based? I see in the background of yours, it looks like a world map of some kind. Where are you right now?
Yeah, this is actually a map of exactly where I live. So it's in Helsinki. And it's an island close to Helsinki. You can go with the car and so on. But, like, yeah, that's the map.
Okay. So how big is the island?
It's quite.
It's not a private island, I suppose.
it's not quite there yet, and I don't think that would be really like the way Finland works. But yeah, it's quite big. Maybe like 20,000.
Oh wow!
People there.
That's rather big. Okay, so you live on an island. Tell us more, like, you know, if there's people that don't know you, that haven't bumped into you before, like, who is Marcus?
Yeah, so, I'm the co-founder and CEO of Enrich. And my journey, like, started in maybe in the beginning of 2000s. In Finland, there was equivalent of this dot-com bubble, but it was the mobile bubble. So I was working in a mobile games company in 2000s, you know, like that was about SMS.
Okay.
And you can imagine, like, you know, what games are now and what they were back then. But it was like,
I thought for a second you would say, like, I invented the worm for the Nokia mobile game.
Yeah, exactly. Like, not quite, but it was really like a great experience. It was a company called Riot Entertainment. And there were, like, you know, these big game licenses like Marvel and Lord of Rings and so on. And it was really like international business. So that's where I kind of learned how to do, like, you know, really expand internationally. And after that, I got really like kind of a push of starting my own company. So then I did that first in the mobile marketing company called Intermobile, and then eventually into like more on the agency side, like this promotions company called Dot Promo. which then eventually I exited with my co-founder in 2012 or something like that. And then worked a couple of years in a media company, like a small media company, like also targeting B2B. And mm-hmm. from there, kind of shifted to Enrich and really kind of saw this need in the B2B space back in 2015 that digitalization is inevitable, but this market is really moving very slowly. So yeah,
right. So you've always had the entrepreneurial itch, it sounds like. You know, this is not your first rodeo here.
Yeah, correct. I really enjoy it. It's so much fun.
Yeah, but did you start out as an engineer or on the technical side or more on the business side?
Yeah, good question. So I'm master of science and data science and some kind of production economics. And I've always been very interested in marketing. So I'm kind of a technical guy who was kind of really into marketing, and that's basically what I've been then working with throughout my career.
Exciting. Well, congratulations on a good journey so far. And now you're on to yet another exciting one.
Indeed, and this is by far the most exciting one.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit more about it. You said you saw a need in the market and digitalization. And what are you guys doing at Enrich?
Yeah, so if we start from the need, so we have there are B2B companies. B2B companies are basically quite a lot of B2B companies are not really good in go-to-market, especially digital go-to-market. And what we saw was that the buying behavior is changing. So people are searching more and more, during the buyer journey. I mean, everybody knows 70% of the buying process is happening online before buyers are in touch with the salespeople. So there's a lot of, kind of the buying behavior is changing much faster than go to market, organizations. And that's where we, saw the potential. And we also saw that this change is going to take 20 years. So it's going to go for a long time. So this is not kind of an explosive market, market with an explosive growth that suddenly these, you know, big companies are going to, change their sales organizations. They are going to get rid of the investments to events and then shift everything to digital. No, it's not going to be like that. It's going to be a gradual path. And, that's what we saw basically, that this change is happening and we wanted to tap into that. And, that's when we started Enrich.
That must be very different in various industries, right? How fast the digitalization goes.
You're completely right. I mean, this is a generalization, and I would say if you take B2B SaaS, for instance, they are like this. This is a forerunner.
Yeah.
And also, if you take different markets, like I'd say US is probably 5 years ahead of Germany, and again 10 years ahead of maybe Japan. So it's really also depending on the market. And then if you take something like really traditional, like manufacturing, process industries, they are they are still where they were in the 90s. It's a lot of difference.
Yeah. So I happen to have some insights in these processing companies. My wife is the CEO of a chemical plant. They do some kind of white powder that is good for the world. But anyway, what would you do for not that kind of white powder?
Okay.
But what would you do for that kind of company?
Yeah. So if we talk about Enrich, so our product it's an account-based marketing platform.
Yeah.
And what the account-based marketing essentially means is that we help the customers to, first of all, determine what is the ideal customer profile of theirs. So, what kind of companies should this chemical company making the white powder, who should they actually sell to? Who should they focus to? Maybe they know that already. Maybe their sales knows that, marketing doesn't know. Maybe nobody really knows it. Maybe it's just an individual salesperson's gut feel that, these are the companies we want to sell to. But that's the first step always, to determine which companies actually are most likely to generate, you know, big business for you during the next, you know, 12 to 24 months. So that's the first thing. And that's like what we help customers determine and manage like within our platform. And then the next step after you do that, you need to, I'd say this is a challenging case with the process industry,
of
because
course,
like
yeah.
you'd need to align the sales and marketing, and everybody knows that, and this is kind of an age old thing, that there is the gap and silos, you know, between the sales and marketing. That's just like a reality.
Never heard of those silos.
Indeed, that's yeah, it's just an interesting thing that's been around since probably the 90s, and it's still not fixed to any extent.
Yeah.
So is this something that the company does internally, sort of look at what is the knowledge internally of potential customers, and then they place that in a repository or in a system that everyone can access and work with? Or do you help them with some kind of sourcing, or does your tool do any sourcing to find digital twins or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you put it quite nicely. So we obviously integrate with the CRM. So CRM is always should be this like one source of truth. That's where the marketing and sales, I mean, that's what sales uses. And we obviously integrate there. What we use as a methodology is that we analyze the customer's opportunity data. So they have sales opportunities within their CRM, and I'm hoping they would be using their CRM properly and, you know, marking the, you know, when the opportunity is created and so forth.
Data is always rubbish.
yeah, exactly. So, but let's assume that it's like at least some kind of quality.
Yeah.
So then you get to this question of like which kinds of opportunities are moving fastest towards like throughout the pipeline, and there's a metric called sales velocity, which we then try to optimize. So it's the win rate, it's the average deal size, and it's the sales cycle. So kind of combination of those to find a profile of the kind of accounts, kind of firmographic profile of those accounts that have the highest sales velocity. And then, as you said, this digital twin or lookalike, kind of finding similar companies to those. It depends a bit, like if you are a process company like that, they probably already know their market pretty well. And then they already have like, you know, it's more probably about upsell and cross sell than about, you know, finding completely new customers. Or could be, but if you take like tech companies, SaaS companies, that's where you really want to find new market, net new market, and that's where this method is really powerful.
Okay, just very quickly, Marco. So, from your perspective, for Enrich, in one sentence, who is your ideal customer profile?
Yeah, so it would be tech companies who have realized that this so-called spray and pray approach, where they just kind of target whoever and then do the MQLs, do the SQLs, and then notice that, you know, what marketing is delivering, sales is not really appreciating. They are realizing that this is not working. Like marketing is not really able to, you know, help sales and help the revenue growth. And they need to do something. They need to change somehow. And they realize this change. Maybe they've heard about account-based marketing, about intent data. They want to, you know, like implement those in their organization. And yeah, typically it's companies who are growing fast. They have funding. They are IPO'd. They are doing acquisitions. And it's the tech industry in general. We are not really, we are more agnostic to the industry, but it's more about the maturity of the company, like how ready they are. So I'd say process industries probably are last in the line, just because of the fact that they are probably not very advanced and they don't really realize that there is such a need.
All right.
Okay.
So, something that is also good before we move on to the main topic of the episode is just to go through some numbers here to get an idea of, you know, the size of your operations and so. So could you share a little bit, what is the current ARR that you have and how much are you growing year over year?
Yeah, okay. So I can't unfortunately give you the exact numbers, but I can tell you that our target end of next year or during next year is to reach 10 million in ARR. So that's the plan.
Okay.
And it means that it's a significant growth and quite ambitious.
So if you give us the growth here, we can count backwards.
Yeah,
so
yeah, exactly. I won't
how
give
much
you,
have
you? I won't give you the exact numbers, but it is ambitious numbers like that that we have. So we see. I have to say that this market, like we just got to the Gartner Magic Quadrant for ABM platforms, and like Gartner has this kind of the maturity curve of the different industries, and they see that ABM platforms are kind of reaching this maturity. So we are seeing that there's a lot of demand, and the market is growing and going to be growing quite fast during the next year. So that's what we want to tap into.
Okay, but you have had a pretty good growth journey the last few years. Should I interpret you like that?
I have to say that like it's been kind of fluctuating a bit.
Yeah.
So like several, you know, there were like several different things that happened like during the past few years. Like there was COVID, there was the crunch of the investing, and actually as a sad point, like my co-founder died.
Oh.
Like in 2022, and so there had been a lot of these different things that like we've had to, you know, work our way through, and yeah, now we are like set for the you know, future and the growth.
I understand. Thank you for sharing. Really, really sad to hear. And but you mentioned also a bit about funding and sort of the investment market. So how are the operation funded so far?
Yeah, so we have a great investor called Ventec. They are a French investor. We did a Series A, our first round, basically. So we didn't have a seed round at all, which was 4 million in 2020, end of 2020. And now at the moment we are profitable and income funded, and basically like really juggling this cash flow and investment. So just, you know, like the organically growing.
Okay. And can you share anything about number of employees, number of customers or so?
Sure. So in terms of employees, we have about 50 as the headcount. We are fully remote. So it's just, we were looking at it with our team, and I think we have, we are people in 17 different countries, and not even, it's just a couple of people in the same city in general. So we are really kind of, remote,
yeah.
which is really good, because this has enabled us to tap into the resources, kind of best possible resources. Of course, it's not without, you know, challenges, but yeah, it's I think it's a great model, and we started implementing this already in 2018 or so before COVID. So it was not kind of something that we realized with the COVID, but COVID was just a great change in the market, because then suddenly everybody accepted that this is a, you know, completely acceptable model to do fully remote.
Yeah, it's so different. You know, I just was in a conversation here and were quite many, and they worked in other kinds, you know, they were consultants and this and that, but they said, you know, it wasn't allowed at their work to work remotely. Now everyone should get into the office again. So we're very fortunate that works in companies that have more flexibility, I would say.
Exactly. I can't really. I mean, if you have the offices and you're paying the rent, I understand that, you know, that's an investment and you need to, you know, get something out of it. But like, you know, without that, I just can't really see why it should be like that.
Yeah. And before we move on here, what does the ownership looks like right now? How much do you own of the company at the moment?
Yeah, so we have done just like one round, and I can't give you the exact numbers, but you can imagine like then how it is. So
okay,
we'll take that as you're still majority owner. The founding team is still the majority owner.
Yeah, there's just me now. Like so.
Yeah. Okay.
Good. So I mean, you mentioned here that and congratulations, by the way, that you were included in the Gartner Quadrant here for the ABM platforms, and I think you were the only European platform that were part of that quadrant, right?
Yeah, that's right. It's really like, it was really like a big achievement for us to get into the quadrant, and especially considering the competition there. So it's
exactly, you know, and we wanted to talk a little bit about this, because you find yourself in a situation where, you know, you started out at least the journey from a smaller European country, and now you have presence everywhere, and you're up against some, in this case, big American players that have been around maybe a little bit longer. They have, in terms of funding at least, more muscle, more resources. And this is a situation where we see many other European CEOs, founders, and SaaS companies, they find themselves in, like, they have something really good going on, but across the pond, there's somebody that does something similar, at least on a piece of paper. But resource-wise, you can't outspend them. They will always win on the outspending exercise. So you have to outplay them. And this is, I know you guys have been like really thinking about this, like, how do we outplay the competition here? And we wanted to talk to you about this, you know, and see if we can get some of your secret sauce and tips and tricks for everybody else here. So, you know, obviously, if we take Enrich situation, you're in a market that is like, it's growing now, it's getting, you know, more popular. There's existing players in there that are rather big. How have you differentiated your marketing and your offering in this space to essentially stand out to the customers? What have you done?
Yeah, this is a good good point, a very interesting angle. So as you said, the competition that we have, like when we talk about, you know, 4 million in funding, they would be talking about maybe 200 million or so, all of them. In terms of valuations, like we are talking about, you know, billions, like unicorn level companies. So, and there actually aren't so many. Like we have maybe five meaningful competitors. So this is a very interesting market in general. So for a user, for a B2B marketer, like there are not so many options available, which is kind of the strength of ours. So. So what we've done to kind of we like already like early realized that obviously we can't outspend our competition. They'll have they are just pushing so big sales force. They have huge visibility and they generate a lot of awareness. Everybody knows them, and we're kind of like up against kind of this IBM effect that you know, like you never go wrong when you buy from IBM. So it's a really challenging thing. So I'm you know, not going to lie and say that it would be easy. Or it would have been easy. So first thing is kind of the foundation. So we really like to kind of drink our own champagne and practice what we preach. We started by defining the ICP in a very narrow way, and we have focused so far mainly to Europe. So to basically that's the differentiation we have. We are the leading European player in this area, and then just finding those, let's say, different characteristics that come with it. Things like privacy, GDPR compliance, which actually took a bit of time for the US players to catch up, and I still think that it's a bit of a challenging thing for them to really kind of deeply understand it. So defining this ICP in a way that you know, it's a very specific type of companies in Europe. So for instance, B2B SaaS, tech companies in general, they have funding, and so forth. So that's like what we started with. And then, once you have the ICP, like it's very important. Like again, we now go to our organization that our team is very agile and communication works. So we're kind of taking this, as an advantage that we are small. So instead of saying that, you know, let's build a process, we are thinking more in a way that, you know, like let's work in an agile way, ensuring that everybody is aware of the core, which is the ICP. So we have marketing, we have sales, we have customer success, and in sales we have the account executives, we have the business development team. So there are like different stakeholders in the revenue team that all need to be kind of focused on the same goal. So the last thing we want to do is to build silos, you know, within the organization. But yeah. unfortunately, we see that this often happens with many companies. So I would say that kind of building this, I have to say that it hasn't been easy for us either. So we have, it's kind of a trial and error process.
Yeah. So could you share an example of where it has been good to be agile and fast moving?
Yeah. So if we think about like our even our ICP that we have seen like a signal that a certain kind of an approach works, then we are quite quickly able to adapt our entire go-to-market motion like towards you know that goal. So I'll take an example. So we have on top of the ICP, you always need to have data that shows you which companies are most ready to buy and talk to your sales. So kind of understanding this buyer journey data, and this is called intent data. So
right.
So capturing those signals of intent from different sources is very important. So and this is like one idea that also could be very useful for others is that we found out that there is a very interesting intent source. It's like the technographic data, which I'm sure many people are aware of. So kind of finding out that somebody is using a certain technology, but like not only that somebody is using a certain technology, for instance, our competition, but also like when they started using that technology. And when they start to use the technology, then, you know, this is a clear signal that they are in market. They are now, they have, you know, like started to use it. So they are now assessing it. And typically there's some kind of proof of concept, proof of value type period where they haven't yet, you know, signed the contract, but they are still already using the technology. And this is like something that we saw at one point of our journey. We actually, you know, through this found a couple of really good customers. So we were in touch with the customer and said that, mm-hmm. you know, we were we understood that you are evaluating, you know, one of these competitors of ours, and would you be interested in hearing about our solution? And the reaction was like, how could you know? And that's great that we are just, you know, in this process, and it's great to hear that there is a European alternative as well. So yeah, and so with this we were like really able to quite quickly, you know, within 1-2 weeks, we were able to kind of steer our go-to-market to utilize this kind of data sources. So yeah, that's where I think like it's been.
Yeah, so you should be a little bit careful in putting your script and do a demo version for a customer, because there are sneaky ones out there that can take advantage of them. And
you can put it like that.
Yeah. But good, a good tip. It can probably be used by others.
Yeah, that's why we say, like, if you can't outspend them, you got to outsmart them.
Yeah.
Hey there, are you back on the growth trajectory again? Congratulations. Then you should connect with Noble Recruitment to hire the best GTM talent for your business. Whether you're looking for a strategic leadership hire, building a whole sales team, or opening a new market, their world-class recruitment teams in Sweden, Denmark, Benelux, UK, and Germany are there to assist. Head on over to noblerecruitment.com and accelerate your recruitment activities starting today. So you mentioned something that I thought was interesting, and I want to like hang on to a little bit. You said something that, you know, you're up against the IBM effect a little bit. And the IBM effect, the way at least I understand it, is like it's a safe bet. Nobody has been fired because they, you know, they bought something from IBM. How do you combat this? Like, you know, when you're up against somebody, like, and because here it's also about emotions and like, am I going with the safe bet, the one that has, like you said, 200 million in funding and so on, has been around, visibility. What have you done to combat this and win the loyalty of the customer?
It's a good question. And unfortunately, the IBM effect is the stronger, you know, the bigger the company is, because people are less or more risk averse in the bigger companies. So what we do essentially is like we play on our strengths and on the differences like to our competition. So if we talk about a bit smaller companies, the IBM effect is not so strong. And it's what you have there is that you would be considering the like capabilities. Do we need all of that? You know, like is it in a way that, you know, you need everything that this you know platforms are providing, or is it in a way that maybe we could just focus on certain kind of key capabilities? So kind of like how complex is the solution that you actually need for your like in our case go to market efforts. Then on the other hand, like how easy is it to use and adopt? It's kind of going hand in hand with this thing. So when you buy from IBM, you probably, you know, it's you need to learn a lot, like you know how to use it. You need to maybe hire somebody who knows those platforms, and it is exactly this way with like with our competition that you actually need to. It's quite hard like to learn to use them because they are so complex. So this way, like again, offering this agility that, you know, you can do it yourself, with your internal team. You don't need special skills. You don't need agencies. You can just like, you know, start using it, yourself. And then, finally, of course, not as the least point is the price. That is this kind of the correct price point for you? So there are like, kind of, you need to be identifying those key capabilities, and then well, that's at least our playbook, and then kind of focus on those, and then just play on your play on your strengths. Yeah. And recently, I just have to bring this up. Recently, there is this tendency and direction, especially in the US, because of this venture crunch, that companies need to be profitable. So it means that, like, it has meant that they have had to reduce their customer success stuff, and actually like changing a lot of it into you know LLM or generative AI and knowledge bases, and just kind of taking the human out of the loop, which means that many of the smaller customers especially are getting like served much worse than they used to be served. So that's also something that we want to emphasize, that you know we are there with the customer, like we are helping them like in this journey instead of like leaving them alone with this, you know, expensive complicated you know piece of technology.
Yeah, and I think the way I interpret your answer is something that I really appreciate. It's like when you're going up against the giants here, if you're going to play their game, you're going to lose. You have to introduce a new game to the customer. And Thomas, I don't know if you recall, but when we worked for a company, we had in our space, there was a competitor that was the Rolls Royce of the industry. You know, from a product perspective, 10 out of 10. But you also, like you described, you had to pay for that 10 out of 10. There is like it came with some certain level of complexity and sophistication and so on. We didn't offer a Rolls Royce. We offered, you know, a Porsche. And we offered that Porsche only to a certain type of people. So our message was more like, you know, if you need 10 out of 10, you should go with that vendor over there. But based on our analysis, you actually need 5 out of 10. And we happen to have 7 out of 10. And you're going to get up and it's much faster. We also played on this like, okay, do you want to be, you know, one customer here in Europe among tens of thousands of customers or however many customers this already has? Or do you want to be with a European vendor that really cherishes you and we're specialist? In this case, we claimed that at least in the beginning, we were specialized in a particular vertical. We were like, we know everything about fashion. So everything we build going forward in the product will be about fashion, while they had, you know, general product information management capabilities. So we tried to find a way to argue about like, you know, 10 out of 10, if you need it, you go there, but you only need 5 out of 10. And we offer that much better, much faster, and probably at a much more affordable price point than anybody else. So we tried to change the game a little bit And that was the only way we won. And it was very successful.
And what we have learned now is that Daniel considers a Porsche 7 out of 10.
I would personally love to drive a Porsche. And in my world, it would be a 10 out of 10. But hey, somebody wants to sit in the back seat and have a driver, then you should probably get a Rolls Royce.
Yeah. But Marcus, you were nodding here. So what are your thoughts about what Daniel said here?
No. I mean, it's exactly the same playbook. So I'm would be... great to talk more about that and maybe learn from your experience. You've been so successful with your own venture. So I think it sounds like a very, very similar.
Yeah.
Maybe one more point I want to bring up here that there is also this kind of still going back to this IBM effect, this big companies. And that's where it's very difficult, because this effect is so strong. So what we've done there, this is kind of a bit of an alternative approach. What we've done there, we've secured some big customers GE Healthcare, really kind of Fortune 500 type customers. So then there it's really about finding a champion within the organization who can kind of take you forward in the organization, and kind of it's a long game. It takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
But also I think as advice that I could give, or at least what we've seen working, is that we had to invest a lot of resources to such customers. So when we see, even though they are not big at first, they are just testing, but we kind of see that there is huge potential of scaling. Then what we decided at one point is that, I will personally put, 30 to 50% of my time to just this one customer, mm-hmm. to ensure that, we will grow and we will get the customer. So kind of investing a lot to where you get, when you catch the big fish, don't let it go and don't let it be, as the small fish, but really focus on that and kind of give outstanding service. And that's the way you can beat, even the IBM, with this enterprise, big companies.
Yeah. I like that. And one thing, again, looking back at our experience, when you're up against these big giants, you might be more affordable and give more, for price per feature or whatever you want to call it. Have you come across the situation where somebody looks at you and be like, hey, Marcus, you're half the price of these guys, which by default, in my mind, means that you're half good. We had that experience sometimes. How do you handle that?
Yeah, that's a tricky one. I think I have to say that we've been experimenting with this, whether we want to be transparent with the pricing or whether we want to go with the market and not show pricing on the website, and this is still a bit of a question. It appears, unfortunately, that it is just what you said. I don't think this is a very hard thing to overcome in the end, but there is this correlation in people's minds in terms of the pricing and price level quality and expectations of what they can get, even though that might not be justified at all, in reality. So that's what we see.
Yeah.
So how have you developed your company and culture in order to, compete with these big ones and have the strategy that you have talked about?
Yeah, I have to say that it hasn't been easy, especially if we think about the sales, who is up against these big companies. We get so much feedback that, why don't we have this feature? The customer is really wanting to have it. And then, because these big companies, they just have so extensive products. And obviously when we are up against one of those, then they have defined the requirements to the customer, even though the customer might not really know what they do with a certain feature. Yeah. They still are asking, do you have it? And then, of course, for the salesperson, it's really hard to manage these kinds of situations.
It's hard to let go as a salesperson. There are some cases that, there are too many things that you are lacking. It might not be the perfect customer. I don't know if you work with commission, but you know, I've seen close up that, you know, sometimes you land a customer or you promise too much just in order to, you know, get that deal.
Yeah, yeah. So I think it is just like you said. What you need to do at some point is that you just, you know, admit that we are not going to win this kind of cases. We're just not going to win. It's not because we would have poorer product, or it's not because, you know, we would lose this deal if it was kind of a fair comparison. But since the, you know, competitor has already defined the requirements, like, you know, we can't win them in their game. So let's focus on other customers where we can define what those requirements should be. So I think it's been challenging, and now kind of going back to the company culture. And also being fully remote, it's kind of highlighting easily this kind of a bit of an kind of isolation that people are, you know, alone with their worries and questions. And we've been really working on this to bring people closer together, like even virtually. We are meeting with our team once a quarter or so face to face. That's really important. But now what we have done is that we are like going more and more in different teams, also in the not only in the revenue but also in the R&D teams, to this kind of pod structure, where it's kind of different people from different functions are working together towards the same goal, instead of building this strict processes that, you know, this is how the AEs work, this is how the SDRs work, this is how the marketing works, and so on. But like more just making it more agile, which is again like one of the benefits of being this size, that, you know, we are only 50 people, so it's really possible to do that. And when you get to that point, then it's always possible to, you know, get those wins as well, and to learn like within these pods. Like we are doing this on the regional or territory basis, and for each of the territories, whether it's, you know, UK or whether it's France or whether it's US, like there are different kinds of ways to win in those markets, and it's going to be completely different. And that's what we want to advocate for. So first of all, that there is transparency, that, you know, people communicate and people know what's happening with the other teams. And then there's also this kind of self-direction within the teams, so they can also do decisions within that team, about their particular area or targets.
Yeah, makes a lot of sense. So I'm curious here, have you, in lack of better terms, when competing against these bigger players, walked into their trap somehow? Like, have you done a particular move that you then felt like, ugh, we need to pull back from this move right now? I mean, if there is a certain strategic decision you decided, you see that your competitor, for example, they expand the product or they start messaging around the product in a certain way, and you feel like, ooh, we also need to do the same thing. And then it turns out to be like, oh, you know, we're actually going to have to let them run with this one because we're never going to win this.
Yeah. It's quite well to the point. I think one of the mistakes we made. It's also like one of the, you know, good things in the evolution of our company, that we kind of started kind of this creative copying, in very early of our journey, copying the leaders in the market, which enabled us to kind of catch up and get to the same level. But then at some point, you should give it up. Like, you should understand that you shouldn't be one-to-one. Like, you shouldn't be the same.
Right.
Like, exactly the same. You should be like understanding that, okay, this is important actually for the customers. This is where the customer gets the value. And let's focus on that instead of saying that we have, you know, we have all these features that the others have. And yeah, I have to admit that, you know, we have gone to that trap a bit in the past, and it's painful, because we don't have unlimited resources for the product development. So, you know, developing something actually the competition has, but actually ends up not being so useful for the customer, then you know, that's just, you know, pointless.
Yeah,
definitely.
All right. So let's try to summarize here a little bit. So what would be your best three tips here for companies that are finding themselves in a similar situation that you are towards the market?
So first of all, define the ICP. Define your ideal customer profile, what kind of customers you go against. And this doesn't require technology. This doesn't require like, technology is not the solution. Like you need to really do this and align about it with your top management. It's a strategic decision, really decide that this is the market we want to go with, and then collect data about that market. How is it working? Don't iterate, don't change it all the time, but be ready to change it, let's say, on a quarterly basis and kind of as you get the data. So this is important. So don't do spray and pray. Like that's my number one advice. It doesn't make sense. Like you just spray and pray means that you just, do whatever and then hope that you get something. Hope is not the strategy. You need to be really kind of strategic. So that's the first point. The second point is that use your resources wisely. So when you are not huge, then you can't waste anything. Like you can't waste money with the marketing, with the advertising, or like with the events, whatever. Like don't waste those. Think about like what is affecting our ICP. How can I measure how is my investment affecting our ICP? Then on the other hand, like don't waste your human resources, so people. So when you have your sales team, don't make them, don't use them as an awareness generation like a team, so that they are just like randomly going after your ICP, but have some kind of an idea of like how to determine that, this is an account, the sales should be focusing in. So kind of combine, try to get this data about like what your ICP is doing, like whether it's it could be that you meet them and in the event and they give you some kind of insight. Focus on that account instead of just focusing randomly on some like random parts of your ICP.
Yeah, I hear events is great.
Events can be great, and this is the point that like it doesn't mean that every event is great, but just think about your ICP. Like it has also changed our approach to events, that we are like first thing we do that we ask, does this event reach our ICP or not? And if not, then don't do it. Like why do you do it? There's no such thing that you should be doing.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
So and then I think the final point is that try to align the teams. So don't be when you are small, be a child and ensure that there is no gap between for instance sales and marketing or customer success. So in a way that there is transparency, there is cooperation, there is agility, and fair rewarding also for the contribution that each of the teams have. So yeah, that would be the three advice.
Thanks.
Excellent. And this was really insightful. Marcus, thank you so much for sharing this. Hopefully the listeners out there, you guys were inspired by this as well. And Marcus gave you some tips that you can run with. And speaking about running with, we're all running into the future here. Marcus, what does the future hold for you and Enrich here? If we speak in 12 to 18 months, what will you tell us then?
Yeah, so we are really like, as I mentioned, like we really see our scaling is taking off, and we see that the market is taking off. So we are going to be solidifying our position as the European leader, and we are actually also now intensifying our approach in the US. So that's what we are doing, and really like one-eyed focus on that. Like I mentioned, we are like targeting the 10 million in ARR during next year, and that's our like really that's our future, and that's the way we go. We are not planning to raise more funding, so that's kind of a challenge and one point to take into consideration that I want to build healthy business, and it's not going to be easy, and it's not easy ever. Like when you don't have this, you know, unlimited, you know, funds to spend, but this is the way to do healthy business. So.
Yeah. So you just disappointed all the investors listening in on this podcast here. So
they thought the episode was good until now. Yeah.
So you're not looking for money, but are you looking for anything else to support you on this growth journey? Is there, particular talent or anything else that you feel like, yeah, I could use a hand here?
Yeah. So actually, what we are, let's say, working with or looking for is the AI part.
Okay.
So the way I see it is that this is more on the product side and on how this current technological level that is there, how it can already like bring so much value to the customers. Mm-hmm. And it's not true, you know, ChatGPT, you know, it could be like that, but that's actually quite hard way to access it. So that's really like something that I'm really excited about at the moment to kind of bring these capabilities into our product, which is something that we will be doing quite soon.
All right.
Cool.
And you confessed before we started recording that you hadn't listened to any of our episodes yet. So what guest would make you listen to an episode of the Sassiest Podcast? Any suggestions of a guest or a topic that we should talk about?
Yes. So there is in our this go-to-market space, there is a company called Cognizant.
Yeah.
And their CEO, James Isley. I don't know if he's been on your podcast, but if you can get him, that would be great. He's done amazing job with his company. So
sounds like a really good suggestion, and maybe a little challenge as well. So we like that, and we also liked very much to have you on the show. And see you around, Marcus.
Thanks a lot. Great discussion, and thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Take care now.
Daniel, what's your takeaway from this episode?
Actually, funny enough, this one made me go back a little bit down memory lane and recall some of our own times in a similar situation. You know, Thomas, we used to, you know, fight some of these bigger giants ourselves. We were in a situation like this. So I'm trying to marinate here, like based on what we discussed here, based on what we've been through ourselves. How do I want to summarize this? What's my grand reflection? Like, why don't you give me a minute here? So why don't you go first while I try to say something clever?
No, but I think if you're in a situation here where you need to outplay a company and you can't outspend it, you need to be even more narrow with your ICP. I mean, he mentioned you can't spray and pray. You need to make sure that you from I mean, all parts of the organization, the management team and the sales team, the marketing team, the product team, that everyone knows who we are targeting and why, what we should do, and maybe even more important, what we shouldn't do. And and then just go for it, work, be agile, be not afraid to change direction if you want to. And well, that's it.
Good takeaway. I mean, in that case, then what I would like to highlight here is that sometimes it's not about feature to feature. Like they can do this, we can do that. They can do X, we can do X, and so on. It's about what's happening outside of the actual product you're offering. So sometimes it has to do with, is your vicinity, you know, the geo vicinity, that in fact that you're European, is that an advantage? Is it an advantage that you're more GDPR compliant than somebody else is? Or is it the fact that, you know, you're smaller and you're in a position where you actually have a situation where every customer means a lot more to you? So that means also you will offer more service and more hands-on, and customer success will be closer and so on. So sometimes you need to think about what else beyond my product can my company offer to the customers here that will make not my product, but my company stand out? And I think that's something we learned throughout the years because, you know, yes, people buy products, but essentially what they want is a relationship with a partner, or in this case, a supplier. And it's the relationship you want to sell and cement as the winning piece and not just the product. So, and I think Marcus also highlighted that well when he talked about, you know, like they went the GDPR route, they went the security and safety route, they talked about, you know, how they can get some extra love to certain type of clientele compared to other vendors. So I think it sounds simple, but you just, coming back to what you said, Thomas, you just need to understand who will actually care about this. Not everybody will care about this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And well, something that we care about, and hopefully you care about, is this podcast. And sometimes you get surprised, in this case, that Marcus never had listened to an episode. But what is equally surprising, that sometimes you bump into someone that says, you know, I listen to the podcast every week, or I listen to a lot of episodes, or anything like that. And we have never met this person. Maybe we didn't know of this person's existence and so on. So if you know that we haven't been in contact, we haven't bumped into each other, we haven't been to the same meetup or event and so on, drop us a line. You can send an email to contact@sassiest.com. You can find us on LinkedIn, send a DM. Maybe you're a part of the Slack community. Just hit us up. Would just be cool to hear from you, and also if you have any tips or ideas how we can make this podcast even more valuable to you wherever you are when you're listening to this.
Yeah.
So with that, thank you for being with us. See you soon again next week.
Take care.